All right. So we're picking up on our story of Jesus. And over the last couple weeks, we've been talking about some awesome stuff, like Robbie was saying, that God's been doing. Jesus has been going all over the place doing some real cool work. Do you remember any of those stories? What are some things that we've seen Jesus do over the past couple weeks? V?
He told the storm to be quiet.
Yeah, he told the storm to be quiet, calm down. Yeah.
Cast the legion of pigs,
demons into the pigs. And then ruined all the bacon. What else? Any other stories of awesome stuff Jesus did?
Yeah. All of them.
All of them? Yeah, what are a few of them besides those two? You guys remember anything else Jesus did?
Healed the guy with the
withered hand? Yeah. The guy with leprosy, he's like, don't tell anybody, and he still ran and told everybody. Anything else? Yeah.
He was paralyzed,
dropped him through the roof while he's preaching. Awesome, yeah. What others? Lucas.
I was going to say he healed the cutty guy, but that was kind of like a
crazy. Yeah, that was the legion guy. He was actually like cutting himself with rocks and just going all crazy and all over the place. And actually, why don't we just remind ourselves real quick what Jesus did? Because he's over, he's doing some awesome stuff on one side of the Sea of Galilee. He tells his disciples, hey, we got to go. What time of day was it? Do you remember? Huh? Hey, Clay. Nighttime, yeah, somebody said it. It was night, and instead of being like, hey, let's go get a hotel, what'd he say? Let's get on the boat. We got more work to do. Let's just go all night long. That way we wake up right at the right time tomorrow morning, get off the boat, and do some work. So they jump in the boat, they take off, and when they're out there, what happens? That's when that storm you guys were talking about comes. Gets all crazy. Yeah. And then he's sleeping. He gets up. He doesn't even talk to his disciples. He just tells the storm, hey, be quiet and try to sleep. Boom, it's quiet and talks to his disciples. All of a sudden, they get there. What happens the second he steps out of the boat when he gets to the other side? Boom, there it is. The dude's right there waiting for him at exactly the right time. They have this like eye-to-eye thing. Dude falls on his face, right? And Jesus does this cool like thing and heals him. Casts out all the demons. All of a sudden, the people get wind of it. They're like, what? What happened? They come and see. When they ask what happened, they're like, hey, see that guy right there? That's the dude who used to run around like a crazy man. Yeah, he's all like healed. Look at him. What did Jesus do? How did he do it? Well, he killed the pigs. Uh-oh. What happened then? They're mad. You took our bacon away. We're not happy right now. Seriously. Legit, like, that's our livestock. That's where we get our money from. Like, we're not happy that Jesus did this. Plus, we're freaked out you could even do this thing. We don't get it, this power you have. And so what do they tell him? Get out. Like, please leave. All right, so that's where it picks up, because Jesus actually does pick up and leave when they say that. The guy's like, can I go with you? No, you need to stay. And he gives them a mission. And here's something really neat. Because if I asked you, hey, who's the first missionary to the Gentiles? Yeah, most of you are going to say Paul, right? What did he tell this guy to do, and who is it to? Hey, go back and tell of Jesus' mercy to all of these Gentiles that are your people. Who's the first missionary to the Gentiles? The most demon-possessed guy was that got healed. All of a sudden, Jesus is like, hey, go tell this story of mercy to your people and who did it. Wow. He used that guy. He used that guy to start this message out among the Gentiles. That's crazy. And so he gets in the boat and he does leave. That's pretty sad. Like, people that actually beg Jesus to leave, and when he really does leave, you know? Can you imagine that? Like, I wonder, I just kind of think of people that reject Jesus over and over, and they're like, look, I don't want you in my life. And here's a story where they asked him to leave and he actually did. And then he goes and he gets in the boat. And the cool thing is that he gets to the other side and we see this like drastic difference where he arrives. And check this out. We're in Mark chapter 5, verse 21. Tonight we're going to see two stories. It's like one story that there's this other story kind of pops up right in the middle of it. So we're going to do like a freeze frame thing again and look at this other one and then continue on after. So here we go, verse 21. And when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, here he goes. A great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, that means begged, saying, my little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live. and he went with him. And a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. And there was a woman who had had a discharge of blood for 12 years and who had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, "If I touch even his garments, I will be made well." And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, 'Who touched me?'" When he looked around to see, who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." While he was still speaking, there came from the ruler's house some who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." And he allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. They came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And when he had entered, he said to them, "Why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him. But he put them all outside, took the child's father and mother and those who were with him, and went in where the child was. Taking her by the hand, he said to her, "Talitha kumi," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." And immediately the girl got up and began walking, for she was 12 years of age, and they were immediately overcome with amazement. And he strictly charged them that no one should know this and told them to give her something to eat. Now, Jesus, again, is on a mission, right? Like, the dude gets on a boat. He preaches all day, gets on a boat, goes over, crosses through this crazy storm, gets off, does all this work over here, gets sent away, jumps back in the boat, goes back over the sea. He is just nonstop about his mission. He's barely resting, and he's just going for it. He's like, "I know what I'm called to do, and I'm going to go do it." And here he goes again. He gets off the boat, and the second he's off the boat, as he puts his foot on the shore, there's this great crowd. All of a sudden, there's this ruler, this guy that runs up to him. His name's Jairus, and Jairus is the ruler of the synagogue. Anyone know what a synagogue is or what that was? Yeah, exactly. And so this guy was kind of the boss of the place. He would make sure that the building was kept up. He would make sure that the order of service was right, that people were respecting the conduct in the service. He was kind of like the big wig there. Wasn't necessarily like a priest or anything like that, like the spiritual leader necessarily, but he had a lot of influence in this place to oversee it. And so as this guy comes up, look at what he does. He doesn't come up to Jesus with this like, "Hey, I'm the big man in this place. I need your help right now." He comes up and he follows the same pattern that we see over and over and over through these passages. As people see Jesus and notice who he is, whether they be demons or humans, as they see Jesus, something happens to them. They fall. Every single time we've seen this happen, they look at the Son of God and they respond by falling on their face in worship. I love that Robbie was talking to us about why we come to this place. Like, we come here and it's not just to sing these songs, even though it's awesome, and it's not just to enjoy fellowship from some really awesome people that are here. Those things are really good. But we hope that we come to this place because we're seeing Jesus and we're loving him and recognizing who he is in our lives. And so we have to come and just worship. Like, we want to fall on our faces together before him and shout it out corporately, like, tell him how great he is. This guy sees Jesus, and there's no pride in his heart at this point. Imagine, put yourself in his situation for a minute. Like, his daughter, his baby girl, his little 12-year-old daughter is laying on a bed just over there and somewhere in his house, sick. Like, not just sick with a cold, but like sick to the point of she's about to die. I can't imagine what his heart feels as he runs up to Jesus and sees him and goes, "Man, I don't know where else to go. But it's really awesome that I'm walking out here and all of a sudden here you are getting off your boat and I see you and I'm like, whoa, like I know he can help. I know who that is. I've heard about the miracles. I've heard that this guy has power and I believe it. And you know what? My little girl is sick on a bed. I'll do anything for her. So when he sees Jesus and recognizes that, he falls. And he falls on his face and he's like, Jesus, listen to what he asks him. He says, my little daughter's at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live. Not, hey, Jesus, you have any ideas what we could do? Or you think it'd be possible if you could kind of conjure up enough, you know, Jesus juice or whatever it is you use, you know? Like, it's none of that. It's really cool what he says. He says, come and lay your hands on her so she will be whole. Like, there's no doubt in this guy's mind. If I come to you and I fall before you and ask you, I know, I'm certain, and I believe, I have faith, Jesus, that you can do this. So all I'm asking you to is just put your hands on her. Like, that's it. I'm not saying, hey, do you think you could? I'm saying, go put your hands on her because I believe if you do it, she's going to be healed, Jesus. And this guy comes with a faith that puts him to his knees before the Son of God and says, look, my daughter's sick. Well, Jesus, obviously, right away, he's not like, no, I don't think so. There's too many people here. You know, imagine there's a throng of people. It's a whole lot of people around him. And so everybody's there with these, like, problems. And they're probably all pretty legitimate problems, pretty bad problems. They're needing some help. And as they're all calling out to Jesus and bumping up against Jesus, like, Jesus, heal this. Jesus, help this person. Jesus, that person's sick. Jesus, this person has demons in him. Get him out. Like, all these things are going on. And this guy comes up. Now, I don't know if other people are on their knees falling on their face before Jesus or not, or they're standing, like, I don't know what the scene looks like, but I do know this guy is. I do know this guy has humbled himself before Jesus. It's not like, hey, I need all these things done. It's, Jesus, I can't do it. I depend on you for this. Like, I can't do this. And he's on his knees before the Son of God. And so Jesus looks at him, and out of all these people he could have helped, he says, let's go, let's take a moment, and I'm going to go to your house. So it says he went with him in verse 24, and a great crowd followed him. Everybody wants to see what he's going to do. They've heard these awesome things. They're like, let's go see what he's going to do this time. And they thronged about him. In verse 25, we have to hit pause, because this is the part of our story where we get a little story pop in here, like kind of a little sneak attack coming on, all right? Verse 25, it says, and there was a woman who had had a discharge of blood for 12 years and who had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all that she had and was no better. Rather, she grew worse. So you have this woman with an illness, and it's not just that she's sick. She's been sick for 12 years. 12 years. It's a long time to be sick. And she's probably at this point thinking, I'm going to die. Like, there's no way I'm ever going to get a cure. And so she's kind of in that same boat of, hey, my little baby girl is dying on a bed. I need you, Jesus. She's thinking, I'm dying. Like, I need you, Jesus. 12 years I've been sick. There's no solution. I've been to all the brightest minds, the best doctors, tried all this different medicine, spent all my money trying to get treatments. I have nothing left and no one else to go to. Nobody could fix this. And it's been 12 years. Like, I'm hopeless at this point. I need you to fix this thing. But see, the type of disease that she had was embarrassing. She didn't want people to know what she had. And as a matter of fact, according to Levitical law, she couldn't be married. There are all sorts of rights that she was denied because of this disease that she had. She was a public outcast. She didn't even fit into society anymore. So she doesn't want to go up to Jesus like these other people and go, hey, Jesus, my friend's sick. She's not going to go up and yell out her illness because she's embarrassed about it and she's an outcast and it's disgraceful. So what does she do? She sneaks up behind him. And she's like, you know what? I'm going to sneak up. I don't want to like bring it to his face. So I'll come up behind him and all I'm going to do is just touch his clothes. Like, remember they wore those big robes that kind of flowed? You know, so she didn't have to go up and like grab his arm or anything like that to where he would be like, hey, who's that? She's like, I won't even like touch him. I'm just going to touch just kind of like the hem of his robe where he can't even feel it. Because there's people bumping into him, right? There's people all over the place. He won't know it even happened. And if I just touch just the hem of his robe, it's enough because he is so powerful. I believe I'll be healed. That's how strongly she believes in this guy, that he is the only answer to her problem. And at the same time, she didn't want to yell it out. So she's like, I got to do whatever I can. She sneaks up behind Jesus. And she touches. And it says It says, look at this, these next verses. She had heard the reports about Jesus, came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. Look what happens. For she said, if I touch his garments, I will be made well. And immediately the flow of blood dried up. She felt it in her body that she was healed of her disease. You know, I find it interesting that she had tried every other way up until this point. Like she had tried every doctor, the smartest minds, all these medicines. And I think sometimes I can be exactly like this woman. Why did she have to try everything first and find out none of it works before she went to Jesus, who was the one that could fix it? You see that? Like, what would happen if she had gone first to Christ? Why is it that sometimes we always have to go try every other solution in life to fill up the hurt or whatever else it is that we're trying to figure out? We go to other things first, and then finally when there's nothing else, there's no hope left, that's when I'll finally go, all right, I ran out of choices here, God, you're going to have to help me. Wouldn't it be awesome if we could run first to Jesus the second things happen? That our first choice would be prayer and truly believing that our God is that powerful and that real, that He will do things in our life and actively fix our problems. Now listen, that doesn't mean every single time you pray that He's going to fix something that's wrong with you. Remember we talked about that storm might just rage. And as long as Jesus is still in the boat, let the storm rage on. We want Jesus in the boat. It's not going to sink. But the faith to go and say, Jesus, I'm going first to you. And whatever you choose to do with the situation is up to you because you're the king. But I'm going first to you before I try to fix it all in these horrible ways myself that aren't going to work. I trust that you have that power. I really believe in you, and I'm going to put action to my words and actually reach out and trust you first in my life. And so this woman, praise God, she at least got it. You know, she took a while. She took 12 years. Maybe it's just that she hadn't heard about him to this point. I don't know. But the cool thing is she had faith. She had the faith to go do what was the only thing that could fix her and find the king of the universe. And she goes to him. And so she gets healed. And I can see a parallel here. I don't know if you guys see it yet. You see how, like, when we talked about the demons, we talked about how the strongest guys in town couldn't, like, grab that legion guy and hold him anymore. They couldn't even put chains on him. And they put these big, thick chains on him, the heaviest they had. And those chains couldn't even hold him. He would just break them. And the disciples are like in the boat with the storm. And they're trying to like get all this water. And they can't. And the boat's going to go down. It's filling up. And no matter what they do, the storm is just beating them. Nature is winning. Demons in this situation are winning. And now we're here. And like the best of minds can't do this. Over and over and over, the best of the best, the most powerful of the most powerful, are all trying to do these things that Jesus comes along and is the only one who can actually get it done. It's like he's showing off, right? He's just flexing his muscles in every story, not in a prideful way, but he is setting up his authority that I am the Son of God. I'm smarter than the smartest people. I'm smarter than science itself. I control nature as powerful as it is, and I'm stronger than the strongest men and the most powerful demons. I am God. And as they sit here and they watch this happen as he heals her, they're like, how? How did you heal this woman? Our best scientists couldn't do it. Our best doctors couldn't do it. I'm not saying God doesn't use doctors and science to do some awesome stuff. God can use whatever he wants. But in this specific story, his point was, I'm bigger than everything. Run to me first. Don't leave here and go, I'm never going to a doctor again. Rob told me not to. That's not what I'm saying. Okay? It's not what I'm saying. But I am saying that we need to run to Jesus before we run to our doctor. And that Jesus is a lot more powerful than him. All right? But I'm not saying he can't work through your doctor. Okay, so he heals her. And then, bink, we kind of see like this picture into what Jesus is thinking. And these guys just don't get it. Verse 30 says, and Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him. Now listen, Jesus wasn't like one of those superheroes who does like a really powerful thing. You're like Cyclops. Anybody know who Cyclops is? He's awesome. He's good. You know, and then he's like, man, I'm tired. Like all my energy just like got shot out. It wasn't one of those where Jesus is like exhausted because he used up like his Jesus power. Okay. It wasn't that. It's that Jesus felt this awesome thing occur. Like the faith of this woman happens, it comes in and he realizes that this woman was healed. And you know what? Jesus actually enjoys healing his children. He actually enjoys looking into the pain of our lives and fixing it for us and loving us and pouring himself into us. He enjoys those things and he loves people. A lot of times we forget that Jesus really is interested in those parts of our lives. Jesus looks into this woman and says, look, your faith has made you whole. Look what he actually tells her here. Actually, I don't want to skip ahead. I'm jumping ahead. All right, that's a good part, but we're going to get there. Hold on. It says, and his disciples, look what his disciples say to him. He's like, who touched me, right? His disciples say to him, you see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, who touched me? Wait a minute, Jesus, you don't know who touched you? Like, aren't you Jesus? If you just healed her, you had the power to heal her, but you don't know who it is? That's not at all what he's saying. What he's saying here is, remember that this woman was an outcast? Remember that this woman, society didn't accept her? And she didn't even want to tell Jesus out loud what the problem was? Well, what happens if Jesus heals this woman who's an outcast, and it's all done in secret, and they never know that she was ever healed? Didn't she just continue to be an outcast? I mean, she's not going to go up and be able to tell people that she was healed of this thing. It's too much of an awkward, embarrassing thing. So she's going to remain an outcast. Never complete, maybe physically healed, but not emotionally. She's not going to be restored into society. And what a beautiful example of faith. So Jesus literally does this as a way to put kind of on stage and celebrate the faith of this woman so people see his healing and understand what had happened in her, to restore her to society again. So he says, who did this, as a way to get her to speak up? And she does. Look how awesome this is, even though his disciples don't get it. How can you ask who it is? Look at all these people bumping into you. It's probably one of those people playing popcorn right off you. Like, you're bouncing around with everybody like, duh. There's a lot of people touching you, Jesus. It's like over and over, these disciples keep thinking with this physical mindset that this is life, and they don't get the spiritual side of life that Jesus sees. And so over and over and over through Jesus' ministry, we see him trying to like change our perspective and show us what real life is. Like, this is real here. This really is happening. Pain really exists. Situations of life really exist. But it's not life. Life is Christ. And he wants us to see through that stuff and see what really is valuable and what really matters. And then we start to live every bit of what we have here for him. Because it's our joy to do it. Because he deserves it. Because we love him and he loves us. And this relationship that we have just flourishes. All right, so we look back and the disciples, do they sound like they get that? Not at all. They're like, what? We're still thinking physical. Duh, people are bumping into you. He's like, you don't get it. Like, who literally touched me? Like, who took their faith and poured it into me? And so he looks around himself and he finds this woman, and it says, but the woman, knowing what had happened to her, look what she does. Here's that pattern again. Yet another one. Remember the last woman, right? I mean, person. And now her comes up, and fear and trembling fell down before him. So Jairus comes up at the beginning. He's like, whoa, that's Jesus. Jesus, help me. My daughter's sick. All of a sudden, this woman comes up. She's like, who did that? She's like, Son of God, just healed me. Ah, falls to her face again. What an awesome pattern of humility and faith and worship before Jesus. Like, can we get this? Can we get this concept as we read over and over story after story? Just through the, we're only a little bit through this gospel. And how many stories have we seen of people that interact with Jesus and end up on their face worshiping him? He's that big and that awesome and that incredible. We need to kind of grasp onto this if we haven't yet. You know, I feel like there's so much in me that still needs to grasp how incredible my Jesus is. So what, as I'm interacting with him, I'm just falling on my face going, I love you. Like, I can't please you with my actions. I can't please you with my works. I can't do anything physical that's going to please you. No matter how hard I try, you know what you want from me most is for me to fall on my face and worship you and just depend on you. Just depend on you, because that's how I was created. And let you do these things through me that I can't do, I'm not capable of. Let me fall on my face and tell you I can't, but you can, Jesus. I don't know what that looks like for every individual life in here. I'm sure it would be very different across the board, but the same heart has to be the center of it, the same truth, that each of us are depending on Jesus. I can't heal my daughter, Jesus. I need you to. I can't calm the storm, Jesus. I need you to. I can't be healed of the sickness, Jesus. I need you to heal me. See this pattern? Jesus, I can't heal myself of this sin inside of me. I need you to do this. I can't live for you. I need you to help me do that. And we fall on our face before him like all of these people keep doing as he just kind of flexes his muscles as the Son of God. I love, oh man, this is such a good story. All right, next. She falls on his face, and look what she does next. And told him the whole truth. They don't just stop, you know? Every one of these stories, as they recognize who he is and they fall on his face in worship, they get up and they open their mouths and they start to tell people. She tells her whole story in front of everybody. As embarrassing or awkward or scared she might have been to do it, she's like, she told the whole truth, the whole thing. This is what Jesus did for me. Man, can I encourage you guys? If you're not doing that now, do it. I'm not saying you need to travel to Jupiter and start telling aliens about it. Like, you don't have to go that far. What I'm telling you is this. You have people already in your lives that need to hear about Jesus. They're there. You see them every single day. Will you be obedient like these people that we keep seeing over and over as Jesus looks and says, you know what? I did this awesome thing for you. Will you just tell people what I did? It's not a huge thing you got to create or some big job you have to do. It's merely, will you just tell people the awesome work Jesus did inside of you? That's it. That's what Jesus is asking us to do. And she opens her mouth in obedience and boldly tells the whole truth. The crowd hears it and they're all astonished. They're like, whoa, this is crazy. Look what Jesus says to her. Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease. What a beautiful picture of salvation, right? Jesus is the only one who can bring us peace. Peace with this God who we were enemies with before. Jesus can make that happen. And so he brings peace into her, and then we kind of hit play again. And we're back in the other side of the story, and we're going to finish up this main story. Verse 35, while he was still speaking, all right, Jesus still in the middle of the speech, all of a sudden, the rulers, there came from the ruler's house some who said, your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further? Can you imagine? Like, you're this close. You're literally walking with the one guy you absolutely believe can heal your daughter, who you're sick to your stomach over. You're worried about her. She's sick in your house, laying in her bed, about to die. Jesus is right here next to you, walking by your side. You're almost there. You could probably see your house in the distance. You're that close. And all of a sudden they show up and they're like, look, I know how close you are, but don't bother Jesus. He's got all these people around him. He can still help. Your daughter's hopeless. Like, she's dead. Like, his heart must have just sunk. I don't know if you've ever lost somebody before. I'll tell you what, it hurts. I can't imagine losing your baby girl. And being that close. I mean, a bad situation all of a sudden just turns for the worse and becomes absolutely hopeless. And as this guy's standing there on the road and these people are telling him this horrible news, it's like, at least when she was sick, he knew Jesus was going, and so there was a glimmer of hope. Now it's just like there's no hope left. I don't know if you guys can relate to that in your lives of things that have happened. I don't know if there's like, I know I have students come to me like, man, my parents got a divorce, and it was just like this incredible, hopeless situation that I felt like I was in. Like my world was just spinning out of control. Now, I can tell you story after story from my own life where I've felt this hopelessness of like, there's no fixing this now. This guy's there. And as he's standing next to Jesus and he gets this news where all hope is wiped away, Jesus' words ring so loud and clear. Listen to what he says. But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, do not fear, only believe. These guys, with all of their bad news, Jesus doesn't respond to them. He just hears it. He walks right past them and to this guy and directly to his face says, don't listen to them. This isn't hopeless. I don't want you to fear. The one thing I want you to do is believe. Can you hear Jesus kind of speaking that into your life? Into whatever situation you're facing right now or might face soon? And Jesus is looking at you going, look, I know it might seem hopeless or overwhelming or you might really, really hurt, but I care about your hurt and this is what I want to tell you. You don't need to fear. only believe. Don't just believe anything, but believe that the Son of God is in your life and cares. He's in your boat. Remember when that storm's going? He's in your boat. And so the man takes this news, and look at what Jesus does after this. He says, he allowed no one to follow. He made this huge crowd go away. You guys can't come. You wouldn't understand. I can't have you see this yet. It's not time. Except for Peter, James, and John. All right, his three closest disciples he allows to come. And they came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue. And Jesus saw a commotion. People were weeping and wailing loudly. And when he had entered, he said to them, "Why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child's not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him. But he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. Now listen, Jesus shows up at the house. And as they get there, outside, all these people are just wailing. Now in Jewish culture, what they would do is to kind of, I guess, comfort the people that have lost someone. People would show up whether they knew the daughter or not, or the person who died, and they would weep and they would wail and they would mourn loudly. It was part of their culture. It was a traditional thing that they did. And sometimes they would even hire people that were professional wailers. They would actually hire them to come. And so some of these people knew her, some of these people didn't. Who knows what kind of mix was around this house at this point? It's not clear. It doesn't say. But we know there were lots of people around and they didn't understand what truly was happening the way Jesus knew it. And so they're outside and they're weeping and wailing, and Jesus' words to them are, "What are you doing? Why are you guys so broken up over this?" They're like, "What? What is Jesus saying? She's not dead. What are you talking about? She's not dead. We've taken her pulse. We see how white she got. She's not breathing. Jesus didn't breathe for like 20 minutes now. We know she's dead. What are you talking about?" And they're laughing. They're mocking him. You know what he does? He's like, "Get out. Get out. You guys, you don't get it. You don't understand. This is for her, for my disciples, and for her parents. Those are the only people that could stay here." Now listen, it's important that his disciples stayed. You need to remember that. As they're standing there, and Jesus kicks everybody else out, he does this. Verse 41. He takes her by the hand, this little girl, and he said to her, "Talitha kumi," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." Now listen, doctors, Jewish doctors, it was traditional. If you were sick, okay, Chase is sick, he comes. I'm a doctor, I'm a Jewish doctor. He comes, he's like, "Man, I got a cough, I got all this stuff going on, it's phlegm, you know, whatever. Okay, dude, this is what you need, pull up my little medicine," and I give it to him, like, "Here, take these, call me in the morning." The way the doctor would say it to them is like a customary thing. He would say, "Here's your medicine, arise from your sickness." And then he would leave. Now, by saying "arise from your sickness," what that traditionally meant was just like, "Leave it behind. I hope you get better. You know, good luck. I hope you heal up." And it was a traditional thing. Jesus uses that phrase. He takes that phrase from that healing that doctors would say to patients. And as he's standing over his patient here, he uses that phrase. But instead of telling her to stand up from a sickness, he literally tells her, "Here, stand up from your death. I am literally commanding you to come back to life. I'm not going to give you CPR. I'm not going to give you medicine. I'm not going to do any sort of modern whatever that they probably didn't even know back then anyway." He just literally uses his words and the power of him being Jesus, and he kicks death's butt. And he goes, "Get up." And the girl just gets up from her sickness. And she doesn't just get up and go, "Oh man, that hurt, man. Whew, that was a long trip back from heaven," or whatever. I don't know where she was. But anyway, she's not dead. She was sleeping. So she gets up and she just starts walking around. Like completely, totally awesome. She's just like, "Oh, that was good. Like Jesus did a good work in her." And she's walking around healthy. All right? So Jesus pretty much shows his disciples in this, hey, guess who controls death? Now here's my question for you guys as his disciples are standing there. He just got finished saying, "Hey, lady, you're healed," and pff, she's healed. He just got finished casting out thousands of demons out of a dude and healing him. He just got finished calming this ridiculous storm down to nothing. He just got finished healing a dude who couldn't walk, a dude who had leprosy, a dude with a withered arm. Over and over and over, and they're watching him heal and do these amazing miracles. All of a sudden, they face this one, and because she's dead now, they're like, "Oh, this one's hopeless." What? Did you see anything I've been doing over the last few days here? Have you watched all of these miracles? And you still don't believe in my power? And so all of a sudden, those words, "Don't fear, only believe." You have every reason in the world to believe. Even death can't fight Jesus. And so, as his disciples stand there and they hear that advice, don't be afraid, only believe. And they're facing a hopeless situation where someone's dead. Do you think that information might come in handy a little bit down the road here? What do you think he's getting them ready for? Hey, soon I'm going to be dead. Soon they're going to nail me to a cross. Soon you're going to watch me die and be put in a grave for 3 days. And as you stand around waiting, wondering what happened, will you take my advice? Will you remember who I was? Will you remember the things that I've done and that you witnessed with your own eyes? Or will you be afraid? Or will you only believe as I rise again, knowing that I can kick death's butt? You know, for us, this is way more than just a story. The gospel itself is seen all through this. What Jesus has done in us to reach in and pull the death out and give us new life, to heal our sin, to be the conqueror of our death. We can put him up here and say, look, I believe you, and I'm going to be down here in my face and worship you because you are the king. I hope we can see just how big our Jesus is and not confine him to some little church box and these nice little stories we talk about, but he is alive and active in each of our lives, and we need to literally say, hey, it's going to make a difference in my life. The way I believe in you is going to be based on your words to not be afraid, but believe and know that you've rescued me from sin. So I'm going to take a stand and do something. I'm going to literally respond to this power that you have because you're good, not because I'm good, not because I can do anything, but I believe in you, Jesus. And immediately the girl gets up, she begins to walk. Everybody was like amazed. They don't even know what's going on. He tells them, don't tell anybody about this. They're not ready to hear this. They're going to see me kick. I keep saying kick this butt a lot. I don't know if I should say butt a lot, but that's all I can say. He did it. I mean, that's what he did. I don't know how else to describe that. They're going to see me do that when I rise again. So don't tell people yet. And then look at his last. I mean, I feel like that's an awesome ending. You know, if it was a movie, like the little girl gets up and she jumps around, she hugs Jesus and she's all healed. And then you hear the music and it fades out. Like, that's a good ending right there. It's powerful. And then he ends with this phrase. And he told them to give her something to eat. Like, oh, right, why'd you stick that in there? You know, it's really neat that Jesus didn't just care about bringing her back. He cared about her. He cared about her being healthy and growing. And he says, hey, she's probably hungry. Give her something to eat. Now listen, as we're comparing this beautiful picture to the gospel, and Jesus brings us back to life. You know, he doesn't want to just bring you back to life so that we sit. Brings you back to life so that you can continue to live in that life. Eat and drink his blood and flesh. Remember we talked about that in John 6? Like, experience Jesus. Live your life with Jesus. Get in his word and read it. Pray to him. Worship him. Love him. Get to know Jesus and live for him. And as you do that, you're eating. You're growing in him. And so he ends it with that because that's kind of what he wants for us. Will you pray with me? Father God, your scriptures are so full of these amazing things that your son has done so that we can just remember them. We can see your power in it and we can be amazed because that's our Jesus. God, that's our King. Lord, you love us. Christ, I pray that that would sink into each of us so that our lives would be lived for this King. Lord, that you'd wake up parts of us inside that we don't even see that need to be awoken to that fact that Jesus really rules everything and we need to put all our faith on him, our whole lives down for him. God, just respond in obedience, however that looks for each of us as we're kneeling before you, telling you how great you are. We love you, Christ. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.